C1 PR. Number 16B.
So we go on to Life as Life, where he shows that prayer is that sense where we avail ourselves of God as a very present help.
See, now, first, when we come to life, we fall back to God itself. First, in mind, we have fallen back. Yeah. No, once again, that nice illustration of Joseph, apparently, which I explained to you in a very funny English language. That's very typical there, because what did the butler do, the chief butler do, when he had the one vine with the three branches, when he had the three in one principle combined? What did he do to get his life? He said, in the dream he said, I was going back to those grapes and was squeezing them and squeezing them and squeezing them and squeezing them. And that filled the cup of, what do you call, Pharaoh, you see, and that established him again. That squeezing is what? Well, that's the tone of life which is shown here. It is falling back to the 1, 2, 3 as one, to the 1, 2, 3 as one principle, and squeezing it, and squeezing it. That is that when we have those wonderful hours in our day where we think out what is the prayer of mind, what is the prayer of spirit, what is the prayer of soul, and this begins to become tangible and tangible until I feel, well, that sounds through my whole being, or it begins at least to sound through my whole being, through my whole action and life and feelings and doings and thoughts. Well, what I do if I go back to it, I squeeze it. I always squeeze mine and say, what has mind in store for me? What has spirit in store for me? What has soul in store for me? What has the force prayer in store of me? And I squeeze it. And that gives the newness of life. That restores everything. That's what he saw. That's what Joseph saw. That dream of the chief butler was Joseph's inspiration of the working of the days of creation. And he saw, as she says here, she says in life, just fall back to what you know. If we fall back to what you know, what we have seen in the first four prayers, then we have the right cause which leads us to a right effect. Then we have a right foundation of prayer which cannot help but bringing a right effect, a constructive effect. Here she says, fall back not to your worthy prayers, nor to your practitioner. It is not a prayer by say or by proxy. It says, avail yourself of God as a very present help. Well, I can say that naturally from the point, not that I want to say never go anymore to a practitioner. Please don't misunderstand me. What we are considering here is what is the principle of prayer. And in the principle of prayer, and to understand the principle of prayer, we have to fall back not to a prayer by say or by proxy, but to avail ourselves of the whole God, of life itself, which is a very present help in trouble, which she says love is impartial and universal in its adaptation and bestowal. It is the open fount which cries, lo, everyone that thirsteth, come ye to the waters. Where she says, oh yes, that's what we have to do. Let's fall back to the source of all existence. If we fall back to the source of all existence, then we go at the open fount. And that open fount is pouring forth more than we can accept. But here she even depicts it wider and says, And it is so that it is adapted to every individual need, that it is infinite in adaptation and bestowal. And so we get the feeling of that wonderful individuality of life, which is not just a systematic and not just a schematic life, but a life in its full variety of adaptation and bestowal. And then she says, all right, if we avail ourselves of life of God as the open fount, then we fall back really to the real source. You see? But to fall back on that real source, we first had to go through the subtones, but we just first had to desire to go back to the real source. Second, that we just had to make up our minds that we want to have deep and consecrated protest for that real source. And then in the third, we have seen that this must be of the nature of a very definite nature, that falling back on that source is not a changing nature, but it has one identity which is good. And so then we come to falling back to the point where we can see that brings us into the rhythm of science, and all what we get is the outgrowth of science. Then we come to life as truth. Here she says, prayer is a laboring for what we ask, really. She says, in public prayer, we often go beyond our convictions, beyond the honest standpoint of fervent desire. If we are not secretly yearning and openly striving for the accomplishment of all we ask, our prayers are vain repetitions, such as the heathen use. If our petitions are sincere, we labor for what we ask, and our Father which hears in secret will reward us openly. Well, what is the honest standpoint here? He says, there is a prayer. Second, that in that prayer we should not go beyond our convictions. See? The second prayer, we should not go beyond our convictions. That is, we should not take in foreign elements, we should keep it clear. But second prayer said, well, worship the good, but not something else. So we shouldn't go beyond the good we know. And it says, as I said, it must be a conviction, it must be that definiteness, and that's the honest standpoint of fervent desire. That's the standpoint of honesty. So you have the 1, 2, 3, 4 right away. And then she says, that must be coupled with that secretly yearning and openly striving with the fervency of prayer, which says, all right, the sixth commandment says, 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work. Here she says, all right, labor for what you have desired. Our sense of truth is always that sense of laboring 6 days, of seeing, all right, it's not enough to desire, it's to labor for that desire. Not enough to worship, that it's laboring for that worship, to put everything into it, and so on. And says, then, really, if we labor for what we ask, then the Father which sees in secret will reward us openly. It's always a very nice comparison between the secret and the open. It's secretly yearning, you see, but openly striving, that's true. It's not enough to yearn secretly, but truth says, well, demonstrate it. Says, openly striving. And the Father which seeth in secret, well, he too is of the nature of truth. He rewards you openly. He demonstrates itself. He shows you the form of his nature, or the form of our true desire. And then in the last one, again, we get a very nice sequence. But it says, can the mere public, first the epitome which I have is, prayer is a cherishing of the true desire. It's falling back to cherishing, Love is always that which demands us to cherish what we have. And how can we do that? He says, can the mere public expression of our desires increase then? Do we gain the omnipotent ear sooner by words than by thought? The question which he puts is here, how can we get the effect? On what basis can we get the effect? On what basis can we have the increase? The multiplication of life, the multiplication of a new life, on what basis? Can we have it on the basis of mere public expression or by words? And then naturally she has to give the right answer. Says, even if prayer is sincere, God knows our need before we tell him or our fellow beings about it. But if we cherish the desires honestly and silently and humbly, God will bless it. And we shall risk less, shall incur less risk of overwhelming our real wishes with a torrent of words. Says, alright, how do we get the increase of life, the increase of our prayer? How do we get, what is the basis on which I have to fall back in order to have the increase of life, the multiplication of life, the new effects, the new blessings of life? She says, alright, fall back on the desire. Fall back on your silent desire. Not an empty, worldly desire, but the substance of desire, which is that silent, earnest longing. And she says, fall back on your humility. It brings always in the third that humility, where we are willing to rebuke sin. And then she said, that is an honest desire. And she brings in honesty, which we had in the fourth prayer. And then she says, well, that is the basis which God will bless us as increase. That will increase us. And then that is overwhelming. And that's very different than overwhelming God with a lot of words. And so the blessing comes back, God will bless it. It's imperative in love always that if we have a real basis, that love says to the real basis, I'm imperatively developing and unfolding that real basis to a positive, eternal effect. In my questionnaire, I put the question 34 also, where I have asked, note how the depth of true prayer is contrasted here with the superficiality of ordinary prayer. See, it seems life has always to do with the deep things of God, so to say. Life goes to the depth of everything. And so here she asks more or less the question, on what basis do we want to have an effect? Is our basis which we want to have in prayer a superficial basis? Like just petitions and audible expressions and faith and mere belief and blind belief and human faith and mortal belief and what does she say, human thought and the common custom of prayer and petitions and some measure of prayer and so on. You see the superficiality of it. Or then comes the other side, or is our prayer based on something deep-seated, deep reaching, or something very deeply living in us, like fervent desire, willingness to sacrifice everything for that desire, as the deep and conscientious protest of truth, and so on. And it's very interesting to take every subtone, so to say, and ask for yourself, what does she say in every subtone? What is the superficial basis on which one is tempted to fall back in prayer? And what is that deep-seated divine basis on which I should fall back in order that prayer has as its effect a divine effect and not just a superficial effect. Because that's why I ask you also in the questionnaire to read that article of Mrs. Eddy on Faith Cure, because that's what she deals here too. She says, well, on blind faith we can cure. And she even says something like that the practice of the faith cure is far in advance of its science, showing that faith in anything, and I will show you perhaps next time from some medical papers, how faith in everything, and the more stupid the faith is, the more effective that faith works as so-called health. That a faith in the more stupid the faith is, the more irrational the faith is, if it's well presented and well given to the patient, that it works wonders. But it only changes one belief to another belief. In other words, she says, if we have as a basis a belief in health, then we will have as an effect at the utmost a health in belief, but never health. See, and so we have to be very clear that we can never judge an effect by the effect. We can always judge an effect by its cause. That's what this fifth prayer wants to show, that an effect can only be judged by its cause. What has caused that effect? What has caused the change of my health? The change of a sick belief in a health, is that a change into a belief in health or into health? And I can only judge that by falling back on my basis of treatment. If the basis of treatment was of the nature of the prayer which is shown here, then the effect is divine. But if the effect is shown materially as health, but based on belief or some irrational concept, then I know it is only a change from one belief to another. Mortals get only the results of mortals' own belief. That's the tone of it. Positively said, she says, basing ourselves on the first four prayers and basing ourselves with all the life steps we have, then the effect will be life, will be the increase in life, newness of life, better life, holier life, will be holiness. So with these few words on the fifth subject, I just want to let you go home and just pray over it, because there's so much in this chapter. And if I have achieved but one thing this weekend, I'm very happy, and that is this: if I have achieved to show you that in those few pages are 10 times more in it than what we have dreamt would be in it, and that there is some 10 times more exact scientific, logical reasoning and living in it than we have dreamt up to now, then I have achieved what I want. Because then we will have the love to go back to the book. Then we will have the love to ponder them. But remember, when you ponder them, don't get disturbed when the outgrowth of science as enlightened understanding just doesn't flow in the first go. Think of how Mr. Dawley always said how he would work on a subject. How, for instance, in Hosea, where he shows, he said, how do I get the structure of a book, of Hosea or Jeremiah? And he said, well, I read it over 5 times, 6 times, 7 times, and then little by little, some layout begins to show itself, and I have to go over it, and I have to love it, and I have to ponder it, and then step by step something more comes out of it. And that's the method we have to apply. I can't do it otherwise either. It's the principle of prayer that says it. The principle of prayer says, well, we must desire it. Without desire, and going lovingly and desiringly to the textbook, and just love it, and just hope for it, and just be happy about it, it will not yield its riches. It just won't, because it wouldn't be according to the principle of prayer. So I'm very happy if I have achieved but that you would go back and say, my word, what an enormous book, heavy to study. It takes eternity. Time is not enough to accomplish, it takes eternity. So let's start and be patient about it.